Blog Talk Radio.
You go busting your fist against a stone wall. You're not using your brain. That's what the white man wants you to do. Look at you. What makes you ashamed of being black?
Number love for you. You know how hard it is. No doubt. Being a woman, a black woman at that. In this white man's world. Sometimes we overlook the fact that we can ride hard in our streets, we won't be knowing the pain we can cause. It's white man's world. It's white man's world. I ain't saying I'm innocent at all. I'm just saying it's white man's world. It's on. Yeah. For all those times that I messed up or we messed up.
Dear sister, got me twisted up in prison, I miss you. Crying, looking at my nieces and my nephews kissing. They say don't let this cool world get you. Kind of suspicious, swearing one day you might leave me for somebody that's rich. Cap off the bottom, I take a sip and see tomorrow. Gotta make it if I have to beg a bottle. Beating love letters, late night, locked down and quiet. If brothers don't receive they mail, best believe we ride. Eating Jack Matt, staring at the walls, side of the cage where they captured all my ways and bonds. In time I learned a few lessons, never fall for riches. Apologies to my true sisters, far from bitches. Help me raise my black nation, reparations to do. It's true, caught up in this world, I took advantage of you. Tell the babies how I love them, precious boys and girls, born black, in this white man's world. And on the road,
white man's world. I ain't saying I'm innocent at all. I'm just saying it's
looking at my nieces and my nephews' picture. They say don't let this cruel world get you. Kinda suspicious, swearing one day you might leave me for somebody that's richer. Trip the cap off the bottom, I take a sip and see tomorrow. Gotta make it if I have to beg a bottle. Reading love letters late night, locked down and quiet. Your brothers don't receive they mail, best believe we ride. Eating Jack Mack, staring at the walls, silent inside this cage where they captured all my ways and bonds. In time I learned a few lessons, never fall for riches. Apologies to my true sisters, far from bitches. Help me raise my black nation, reparations to do. It's true, caught up in this world, I took advantage of you. So tell the babies how I love them. Precious boys and girls, born black in this white man's world. And all I heard was, to my homie's head, died in his vest, shot him to death and left him bleeding for his family to see. I passed the casket, gently ask him, is there heaven for Jesus? My homeboy's doing life, baby mama be stressing, shedding tears when her son finally asked that question. Where my daddy at? Mama, why we live so poor? Why you crying? Heard you late night to my bedroom door. Now do you love me, mama? Why they keep on calling me nigga? Get my weight up with my hate and pay him back when I'm bigger. It's still ducking in his jail cell, missing my block. Hearing brothers screaming all night, wishing they stopped. Proud to be black, but while we act like we don't love ourselves. So look around, but suck, check yourselves. Know what it means to be black, whether a man or girl. We still struggling in this white man's world.
We must fight for brotherhood.
Direction and a blink of an eye. My time away just made perfection. Cause I think I die. Not going far, why should I care? Like we holding on the lost love that's no longer there. Can you please help me? God bless me, please keep my seeds healthy. Making all my enemies bleed while my G's wealthy. Hoping they bury me with ammunition, weed and shells. Just in case they trip in heaven, ain't no G's in hell. Sister, sorry for the pain that I caused your heart. I know I'll change if you help me, but don't fall apart. Rest in peace to Lil Tasha, Lil Yummy and Kato. Too much for this cold water tank, ended up being fatal. Every woman in America, especially black, stay with me, can't you see that we under attack? I never meant to cause drama to my sister and mama, but we make it to a better time in this white man's world.
You're out of touch with reality. A few of you in a few smoke-filled rooms calling that the mainstream, while the masses of the people, white and black, red, yellow, and brown, poor and vulnerable, are suffering in this nation.
Never that. In this white man's world, they can't stop us. We've been here all this time.
The seal and the Constitution reflect the thinking of the founding fathers that this was to be a nation by white people and for white people. Native Americans, blacks, and all other non-white people were to be the burden bearers for the real citizens of this nation.
My name is Asada Shakur, and I was born and raised in the United States. I am a descendant of Africans who were kidnapped and brought to the Americas as slaves. I spent my early childhood in the racist, segregated South. I later moved to the northern part of the country, where I realized that black people were equally victimized by racism and oppression. I grew up and became a political activist, participating in student struggles, the anti-war movement, and most of all, in the movement for the liberation of African Americans in the United States. I later joined the Black Panther Party, an organization that was targeted by the COINTELPRO program, a program that was set up by the Federal Bureau of Investigation to eliminate all political opposition to the U.S. government's policies, to destroy the black liberation movement in the United States, to discredit activists, and to eliminate potential leaders. Under the COINTELPRO program, many political activists were harassed, imprisoned, murdered, or otherwise neutralized. As a result of being targeted by COINTELPRO, I, like many other young people, was faced with the threat of prison, underground, exile, or death. The FBI, with the help of local police agencies, systematically fed false accusations and fake news articles to the press, accusing me and other activists of crimes we did not commit. Although in my case the charges were eventually dropped or I was eventually acquitted, the national and local police agencies created a situation where, based on their false accusations against me, any police officer could shoot me on sight. It was not until the Freedom of Information Act was passed in the mid-70s that we began to see the scope of the United States government's persecution of political activists. At this point, I think that it is important to make one thing very clear. I have advocated, and I still advocate, revolutionary changes in the structure and in the principles that govern the United States. I advocate self-determination for my people and for all oppressed people inside the United States. I advocate an end to capitalist exploitation, the abolition of racist policies, the eradication of sexism, and the elimination of political repression. If that is a crime, then I am totally guilty. To make a long story short, I was captured in New Jersey in 1973 after being shot with both arms held in the air and then shot again from the back. I was left on the ground to die, and when I did not, I was taken to a local hospital where I was threatened, beaten, and tortured. In 1977, I was convicted in a trial that can only be described as a legal lynching. In 1979, I was able to escape with the aid of some of my fellow comrades. I saw this as a necessary step, not only because I was innocent of the charges against me, but because I knew that the racist legal system in the United States, I would receive no justice. I was also afraid that I would be murdered in prison. I later arrived in Cuba, where I am currently living in exile as a political refugee. The New Jersey State Police and other law enforcement officials say they want to see me brought to justice. But I would like to know what they mean by justice. Is torture justice? I was kept in solitary confinement for more than 2 years, mostly in men's prisons. Is that justice? My lawyers were threatened with imprisonment.
I just want to spend a minute talking about a couple of the, some of the parallels between mass incarceration and Jim Crow And then, you know, and then once I get started talking here, I can go. But consider some of the rules and laws that apply to those labeled felons today and ask yourself if they remind you of a bygone era. Denial of the right to vote, right? 48 states and the District of Columbia denied prisoners the right to vote. Now, mind you, that's not the case in other Western democracies. You know, in fact, in other countries, there are often voting campaigns within prisons. There's voting drives within prisons. In other democracies, you don't forfeit your citizenship when you go to prison. You're still a person. You're still a citizen. You're still part of that country, even if you're in prison. You get to vote. In the United States, nearly every state denies prisoners the right to vote, and that's just the tip of the iceberg, because then once you're released, you can be denied a right to vote for a period of years, maybe until your probation or parole expires, or for the rest of your life. It's up to the individual state. And nationwide, about 1 in 8 black men are either temporarily or permanently disenfranchised as a result of felon disenfranchisement laws. Exclusion from jury service. You know, one hallmark of the Jim Crow era, of course, was all-white juries, you know, particularly in the South. Well, these all-white juries have had a roaring comeback in recent years. Why? Well, in part because anyone convicted of a felony is considered automatically ineligible for jury service. Automatically ineligible for jury service. And then, get this. If you've ever had a negative experience with law enforcement, you could be struck from a jury for cause. You know, prosecutors able to persuade the judge that negative experience that you have with law enforcement might bias your judgment in a criminal case. Now, good luck finding.
Right.
Many African Americans, particularly of Portuguese of color, who have not yet had a negative experience with law enforcement that conceivably biased them in a criminal case. So even in some areas with relatively large black populations, you see all-white or nearly all-white jury.
Today, officials decree that rapper Brad Jordan, alias Scarface, must be stopped. After being monitored by Secret Service agents for 2 years, evidence leads tobacco and firearms officials to believe that his literally dope lyrics promote drug usage and distribution, degrade women, influence gambling, promote and teach violence, and more importantly, it's influencing our minors and destroying our communities. Officials say he's the lord of underground rap. Him and his music must be stopped.
We got this whole motherfucker on the mission. Now the whole entire world has gotta try to come up with the quickest vision. They claim we threats to society, and now they're calling on the government to try to make somebody quiet me for the bullshit they done to me. Gangsta Nip Spice warned that Tupac never gave a gun to me. So gangsta rap ain't done shit for that. I've even seen white folks from River Oaks don't get to get. So why you trying to kick some dust up? America's always been known for blaming us niggas, but they fucked up. And we were always considered evil. Now they're trying to bust our only code of communicating with our people. Let's peep the game from a different angle. Matt Dillon pulled his pistol every time him when someone tangled. So why you criticize me for the shit that you see on your TV? That's freaks worse than PG. Just bring your ass to where they got me, so you can feel the hand of the dead body.
Nigga, don't believe that song. That nigga's wrong. Gangsters don't live that long.
So now they trying separation and sending black folks in white coats to infiltrate our congregation, tapping into our conversation, taking the message that they get, bring forth wrong premeditation. So David's got a silver mask while listening to Brad. David gets pissed and kills his dad. David Duke's got a shotgun. So why you get upset? Cause I got one. A chest hit, a casket. A nigga got his ass kicked. Shot in the face by a cop. Closed casket. An open and shut situation. Cop gets got. They wanna blame it on my occupation. If you don't dig me, then nigga, you can sue me. Cause the shit that I be saying ain't worse than a Western movie. Don't blame me, blame your man Gotti. So you can feel the hand of the dead body.
Nigga, don't believe that song. That nigga's wrong.
your mind before I bring my nine and stop fucking with Detroit up top. I feel my hot rocks. Bang bang, boom boom, ping ping. I'm the black white boy's got a magazine and don't know how to act. I attack and make you vomit. Down with Khaled, I do my homage. Do we got a brother? I'm McNeil. I'm the illest. Wanna kill this house nigga Don Cornelius. Can you feel this? You punk niggas make me sick. Sucking on the devil's dick, scared of revolution. Need to start douching. Houston is the place. I caught a case. The motherfuckers tried to put a scar on my face. But I bust two times to the guts. Do the Reverend Calvin bust. Got a pair of nuts. I started this gangster shit in 86. Now you're dissing me for publicity. Isn't he a hoe to the third degree? Who me? I'm a G that like to scrap a lot. Down with rap a lot. And I can't stop, won't stop. So fuck Bill and Hillary. Ice Cube, it ain't no killing me. Ice Cube, Scarface, dropping it on these sellout ass niggas. Doing it like
niggas don't believe that song, that niggas wrong. Gangsters don't live that long. Niggas don't believe that song, that niggas wrong. Gangsters don't live that long.
My mother, my father, sisters, my brother. They were intended to familiarize them with the situation I was faced with here. Of course, here in prison, we see the repression, the exploitation, the victimization of lower class.
In 61, Jackson was 19 years old, and he received the indeterminate sentence of 1 year to life.
Well, I was incarcerated under a one to life, a term they call for a one to life, where I could have done 1 year and been released. I've done 10. That's more time than anybody in the state has ever done on a one to life. I went through all the processes. I tried to get out. I went to school, program. But now on the side, I was studying things that I felt would help the community.
Those on the right saw him as the most powerful threat in the prison system.
I think racism is a control device, control mechanism. Create an atmosphere whereby they can control inmates, control inmates. And black is just a continuation.
He was the true revolutionary, the black communist guerrilla in the highest state of development.
I'd be the last one to say that Johnson had suicide in mind. I'm certain that Johnson felt that the police would have some concern, would give some concern to the lives of those five civilians. I'm thinking that Johnson was trying to demonstrate to the public, to the people, just how he felt that these problems should be solved.
Was the incident for which you're charged now, was it a revolutionary act on your part?
You're asking me to confess to something?
Yes. Unless you want to confess. Did you feel that?
Look, one of the most important elements of guerrilla warfare is to maintain secrecy. I've killed nobody until, it's been proven. And they'll never be able to.
Know what I mean? It's war. You know what I mean? Yo, Stick. I mean, shit be real on
war.
The block. Pigs be out there, occupied armies. RBGs, it's a takeover, not a makeover. Yeah. The cops stop you just because you black, that's war. When you through the system for your prince, that's war. When they call my hood a drug zone, that's war. Slumlord charging you for rent, that's war. Why they so rich and we poor, that's war. If you're young and black, you sell crack, that's war. The White House is the Rock House, that's war. George Bush coming out his mouth, that's war. Chilling on the corner with your gang, that's war. Popo do the same damn thing, that's war. When they murdered Amadou Diallo, that's war. Marching in the streets is a strategy of war. Knowing self-defense is a strategy of war. Soldiers try to link with other soldiers in the war. Revolutionaries got to know the art of war. War, what about hip-hop? Use that. Matter of fact, fuck a rap battle. What about a gat battle? Let's take it to the beast and see which cat tattle. Is it Kiss versus Beans, a B versus Ho? What about y'all real niggas against the 5-0? This is M1, DP, don't you forget. Cause you can talk, 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 but that don't mean shit. I ain't gotta pop your top to see where your brains went. This rap shit is way bigger than entertainment. It's the people versus the pigs when it all go down. It's not pop versus big, it's who's getting the power. And power ain't money, dog, it's self-determination. Like taking hot and making it the real people station, that's war. Know what I mean? Yeah. Rap war, whatever war. You live a fast life, more or less, more so, it's still war. Dead Prez, the people radio. Yeah. Get down, get down, get down. RBGZ, biatch.
You are now listening to WRBG, the people's radio. It's a takeover.
We always say the Black Panther Party that they can do anything they want to us. We might not be back. I might be in jail. I might be anywhere. But when I leave, you can remember I said with the last words on my lips that I am a revolutionary. And you're going to have to keep on saying that. You're going to have to say that I am a proletarian. I am the people. I'm not the pig. You got to make a distinction. And the people are going to have to attack the pig. The people are going to have to stand up against the pig. That's what the Panthers are doing. That's what the Panthers are doing all over the world.
Fred.
Black power, black power, black power, black nation. You're tuned in to In Defense of the People, weekly Tuesday night broadcast at 7 p.m. Central Standard Time, 8 p.m. Eastern. With your host, People's Political Party National Chairman, Brother Nat Turner, your co-host, National Self-Defense for the Motherland, and myself, Engineer 1s and 2s, Sister Ami. Calling every Tuesday night, same black place, same black time, at 845-277-9266. Again, 845-277-9266. This is the People's Radio, so you can always press number 1 and tune in to the conversation. Tonight's topic, Black August, Big Chairman Fred. I'm going to go ahead and open up the line for our host, People's Political Party, National Chairman, Brother Nat Turner. Black power, black power, black power. Can you hear me, comrade?
Yes, ma'am. Black motherfucking power. Word up, man. Man, say that, man, you were that DP, man, for real. Man, that's it. Straight up. Like, it's straight, you know, like, this is realistic, practical, you know, make all the sense in the world when you know, that brother coming from the perspective of, you know, looking at the collective population of black people, you know, not some romantic notion of, you know, we've come up our success and all these things that we supposedly, you know, we made these gains, you know, in the 60s and our civil rights and whatnot, you know, and not to take that lightly or for granted or anything, but when you look at black people conditions, you know, you look at that shit and realize, you know, like the real world, what people go through on a daily basis. And there are some people who try to speak for black people, you know, talk for black people, and some of them may do a good job, but there are also some who so out of touch with reality, you know, so out of touch with, you know, our communities and the afflictions that we go through on a daily basis, you know. And, you know, that song is a culmination of 500 years of terror on the part of the European who claims to be civilized, a Christian, you know, the free world, civilization, and all these wonderful sounding terms and words and labels and expressions, you know, adjectives that they apply to themselves, you know, like Chairman Fred say, you know, certain politicized revolutionary, you know, intellectual masturbation. You know what I'm saying? And you listen to that shit, and real people, realistic people, they can relate to that shit. And there's problems, and there's solutions to those problems. You know, so it's a call, you know, for a real sense for change. And it is what it is. Everybody ain't gonna like the shit. Everybody ain't gonna dig the song, you know. But it is what it is. There's no personal thing, you know, me, my, and I, and you know, my success, you know, my car, you know, my house, you know, my career, and all that shit. It's way bigger than that. It's way bigger than that. And anybody who understands, who've heard us before, you know full well this is no something where, you know, going after somebody's personal success and putting them down, or it got nothing to do with that shit. It don't have nothing to do with it. But in the real world, most of us don't live in this bubble. You know, most of us have to deal every day, you know, with consistent problems. You know, this shit is consistent. And we're told there's 40 million of us here. 40 million. You know, we can't be blinded by them highlighting and showcasing 4,000 of us. You know, 40,000 of us even. And saying, look, you know, the niggas is free. You know, the niggas is equal to the whites, to the Asians, you know, and so forth. All these successes, all these things and shit, whatnot. You know, you ask when the last time you been in the hood, when the last time you touched down in the real world and went and interacted and mingled with real people in real time. You know, hear what they got to say, how they feel, what they think about shit, how they go, how you make it every day, you know, in this so-called democracy. It's all bullshit. And I'm going to say this here right out of the gate. This system we live under is far from a democracy. And I'll challenge anybody on the earth to prove otherwise. To prove otherwise. Show it to us. Demonstrate it. Demonstrate the shit in real time. I'm not talking about some Alice in Wonderland shit. I ain't talking about that. Some of us can be in these certain environments, you know, it'll almost do something to us. It'll kind of move us away from reality. You know, then when you get around reality, you know, you your heart beating fast and shit. You know, you got some little fears or anxiety, you know, watching over your shoulders or nervous or something like that, whatever. When you run into people who don't look like the motherfucker on the magazine cover or on the commercial, you know, or in the video. Shit, it's real talk, man. Or the person you run into and some of these in the CBD, you know, dressed, you know, professional and all that kind of shit. And that shit is so far from reality, man. It's as far as Mars, as we are from Mars. You know, but, you know, I just wanted to say that shit right out of the gate, man. Tonight's show, you know, a big motherfucking Chad and Fred, straight up, Black Albus. You know what I'm saying? We rounded it out. Tomorrow, is Big Chad and Fred's day he was born and brought into this world. You know, 1948 started off early as a teenager. You know, NAACP started off early, you know, in Chicago, you know, and had this ability. You know, people look at that shit and be like, this young man is way ahead of his time. You know, astronomically ahead of his time. You know, and then to become not only a member of the Black Panther Party, but the deputy chairman of the Black Panther Party, chairman of the Illinois chapter of the Black Panther Party, up to the time he was 21. You know, when he was state-sanctioned murder. And let's be clear on these terminologies. Now, let's be very, very precise on these terminologies, because we're going to allow these people to use these words and expressions and label it, and we follow them. No, we gain that from our experience as a people in this country. So let's be very clear on this shit. You know, state back murder, political murder, political assassination. He wasn't killed. Real talk. You know, Chairman Fred, that's what everybody know him as. You know, real talk, straight up. You know, and this elder, this man, you know, in the field, or you know, along the lines of a young Malcolm X, you know, whom he learned from. You know, man, phenomenal young man. You know, 21 years old. I know this elder, and he, you know, he sizes us up, you know, up today, you know. I've been knowing him for years, you know, when I was younger, and he used to tell me, you know, to have the kind of mind that one has. There are elders who came out of the 60s, wish they had that kind of mind back then. Didn't even get that far. You know, and that's it's the ultimate compliment, you know, to display who this young man was. You know, it's almost, you know, some words you just don't, you're not able to muster, conjure up sometimes. You know, but, there's elders who believe, you know, that the political murder of Fred Hampton was a crucial turning point, you know, in the war against the Black Panther Party. You know, it's demise on the part of the state. What is the state, the politician, the businessman, the judge, and the police, the pig, who the Panthers correctly assessed and reclassified and relabeled as the pig. And some people may have a problem with that. Again, there's no personal trip. Shit we speak on, the things we say, is based on our experience. Black men can speak on shit based on their experience in this country. Black women definitely could speak based on their collective experience in this country. Not, you know, Condoleezza Rice, Kamala Harris, who has a push button, a switch button that she could turn off and switch over to one channel, to the next channel, whenever she get ready, you know. It's bigger than that shit, you know. So it's our experience, even on the streets, terminologies and words are used on the streets. You know, so, you know, we very clear on what had taken place, you know, through the counterintelligence program. you know, to take down an organization that was the most feared organization, black organization, in the history of America. The organizations that we know that were very strong, powerful, like the Black Panther Party. You know, you had the Revolutionary Action Movement, RAM, you know, a lesser-known organization, which actually began before the Black Panther Party. Republic of New Africa, you know, which a government, which ideology of the Southern Belt, as the New Republic of Africa. You know, the Nation of Islam was very strong, you know, in the 60s. His leader, Elijah Muhammad, whose name came up for those who were in contention of being this Messiah that could potentially rise or could rise and potentially ignite a revolution among the black masses, and particularly the black youth. You know, but they said that he was old. You know, but they mentioned several other black men that they saw as the potential black messiah. You know, and one of these was influential in Chairman Fred's, you know, evolution, his growth in the Judas and the Black Messiah movie, which, by the way, was not actually about Fred, Chairman Fred. It was about William O'Neill, you know, the nigga who was very instrumental in the political assassination of Chairman Fred. You know, but there's no coincidence that the Black Panther Party got treated the way that they got treated. They were the most prep of all the organizations. Their depth of understanding, their depth of knowledge put them in the position where the state saw them as the ultimate threat. And so they got their minds right. And Chairman Fred exemplified that. He was the epitome of Black Panther consciousness. You know, understanding not only just what black people go through, not just racism and poor communities and whatnot, not just a feed the people program, you know, not just that, but the system itself, articulate what this system is about, what its nature is, and what it had been doing since its inception in this part of the world under the name of capitalism, you know, which developed this infrastructure. It's the ground work that was laid down, like, when they're, you know, these architectural firms or whoever set out to, you know, build a new high-rise building or whatnot, you know, a damn stadium or whatever. They lay the foundation down, you know, before they build anything on top of it. And they make sure that this foundation is solid. And that's what they were able to do, and that's what he epitomized. All those other leaders during the 60s, to my knowledge, didn't come close. You know, they chose to give us a watered-down version of injustice, you know, a watered-down version of you know, discrimination and racism and inequality and segregation, without explaining to us in depth how this shit works, how it goes. You know, they were the only, you know, they were only, you know, they were not only able to tell you about racism and whatnot, but not only the fact that due to the nature of capitalism, that it was irreconcilable with African people because of the ambitions of the capitalist thought, the capitalist mind, you know, the white ruling class, that, you know, even white radicals today, militants and revolutionaries, socialists, Marxist, Leninist types, and so forth, anarcho-syndicalist types, you know, disdain themselves. They hated themselves, you know. And Chairman Fred went past that usual shit, past it. And he was so charismatic, you know, that he had this potential. He had this power. He had this will, this fortitude that made people want to listen, that drew people to him. Even you know, the hillbilly in the Appalachian Mountains, even, you know, this white group, you know, who call themselves, you know, this rebel flag t-shirt wearing white group, and he politicized them. Phenomenal. You know, remarkable. He was an example of what Huey P. Newton said when power is the ability to define phenomena and make it act in the desired manner. You know, they identify what the phenomena is, to identify it and take power and make it act in the desired manner. You know, the power of the people, and get them to move in the desired manner. What was that desired manner? That desired manner was revolutionary. And so a theory that went into practice. You know? And he was able to get people to see that shit in ways that some others couldn't. And he was way younger than them in some instances. You know, that was an ability that he possessed. There's a documentary, The Murder of Fred Hampton, you know, old black and white film. And you see him on there, he met with these brothers. And these brothers they got a program. You know, and they, you know, they sat down. He sat down with them. And you know, they gave him, you know, pretty much like a synopsis of their program and whatnot. He went through it, flipping the pages and whatnot, and he asked him one question. He said, well, where's your political education piece? Where's your education piece? Yeah, I see everything, but where's your education piece? You know, those brothers, you know, they got to realizing that, we missing something here. And he got them to realize that. And he didn't shoot them down. He didn't, you know, he didn't, you know what I'm saying? He didn't run them in the ground. He got them to see. You know, he got them to see. You know, it's a foregone conclusion. No, there's no foregone conclusion. Here's the conclusion. The conclusion that if you get the people to move, the only way you get the people to move in the most practical way is to educate them politically, to get them to understand they have a political relationship with the state. Again, what is the state? You know, X, Y, Z. It's like a mathematical equation. You know, and they understood it. You know, they looked at other people's struggles around the world. You know, you looked at other people's struggles around the world. You know, and even in cases where we talk about, the black mindset, you know, that there could be a narrowness there that may be a potential shortcoming that you don't limit yourself to the necessary tools that may exist in this world, in this society. You know, and so coalition building, anti-racist coalition building, anti-capitalist coalition building. And so when he would speak, you know, in that arena, you know, what he would say, he was conscious of the power, and he was conscious of all the different groups or so-called ethnic groups or cultural groups or whatever, but he was conscious of it. And so when you say black power to black people, brown power to brown people, red power to yellow people, you know, red power to red people, yellow power, you know, yellow power to yellow people, white power to poor whites, you know, he was very clear on that. You know, so it was never, sometimes there's this perception. I remember a long time ago, when I was, you know, was younger, the sister I'd met, and I'd never forget, you know, she, we were talking about the, you know, I brought the motherfucking Black Panthers up, you know, being the young man, and she had said that, well, you know, the Black Panther Party was integrationist, you know, and I said, okay, and I started listening to clips and you know, watching shit, you know, getting it myself. You understand what I'm saying? And there's been this, you know, sort of a dilemma at times from what I've seen, from what I can remember, you know, keeping it 100, real talk, you know. But the Black Panther Party had an array of brothers and sisters in this organization. You know, some were Christian, some were born again Christian, some had become converted to Islam. You know, some didn't believe in any of it at all. You know, question whether or not God existed, and if he did, then how is he allowing his original people, you know, to go through so much, to be terrorized so much, to be murdered so much, lynched and killed and shot, you know, thrown in prison, set up on trumped up charges, traced out the country. You know, if you know, real talk. But the one thing about them, they were able to transcend those personal differences. They were able to do that and be the Black Panther Party. And so Chad McFred in Chicago, you know, doing this coalition building, and he would, you know, keep the focus on the people, you know, keep constantly politicizing the people every opportunity, every chance. And you put all these things in a perspective. You know, he sized up this government, this democratic bullshit. You know, he sized it up. You know, he called it out for what it was. Fascism, you know, and what will you say? It ain't nothing like stopping fascism, because fascism will stop us all. Put it in proper perspective. He put it in proper perspective, and he knew it was psychological. You know, a lot of this shit was psychological, and so what he would do, he would constantly remind the people. You know, and you have to say it every time. I am a revolutionary. Till you get this shit in your head. Till you get this shit right. Till you, what we call it, they getting our minds right. When it comes to black people, there's this stigma. You know, there's this, like, this thing about some elephant in the room now. Shit, George Washington wasn't no elephant in the room. Patrick Henry wasn't no elephant in the room. If he was an elephant in the room, then they had a whole gang of other elephants in the room, too. There was no chickens in there. No chickens. It was either chickens or elephants. As simple as that. The line was drawn clear. And that's why we say, you know, as people, political party, we wanted the same thing for our people that George Washington wanted for his. even though he was a goddamn hypocrite, claiming some shit about tearing it from one George over an ocean, and why, you know, he had slaves his goddamn self, and he was a rapist. Because I'd be a fool to think that all those black women willingly went to him and gave themselves to him, that they somehow was feeling horny and had a crush on George, or some secret fantasy about George, and they willingly gave themselves to George. No, they do that and do that, period. So when he set up this, Chairman Fred set up this coalition, he had developed a name for it, an identity to it, the Rainbow Coalition. You know, when I was coming up, there was this certain individual who had become a nationally known figure, and we were told was our leader. And he was also born in Chicago. His name was Jesse Jackson. And when they would present Jesse Jackson, you know, this organization would come along with them. And you know, the Rainbow Coalition. And I'd never known that Chairman Fred was the one who actually started this shit. I never knew that Jesse Jackson wasn't the mastermind behind it, that he pretty much hijacked it or took it and ran with it. However you want to chop it up, however you want to say it. But I never knew that. And these things that this young man did in his lifetime, you know, had the, you know, comrades up early in the morning, you know, doing push-ups, exercising, and you know, getting themselves physically prepared, you know, as well as being mentally prepared to do the work of the people. You know? And so becoming such a charismatic person, he formed this coalition, anti-racist, anti-fascist coalition. And when the state seen that, when they saw the potential of this young man, ignoring older Panther leadership, or what one may say, veteran Panthers, you know, Huey P. Newton, Bobby Seale, H-Rap Brown, formerly known as, who's now the man, Abdul Jamil El-Amin, who is currently a political prisoner on a trumped-up murder charge and attempted murder of two Atlanta pigs. But the older brothers, you know, who had been around, you know, who were some years older than Chairman Fred, it's just that Chairman Fred had added to their problem. You know, he had expanded their problems, their worries, their fears. They had a Huey P. Newton to be worried about. You know, who they had turned into political prison, who they tried to assassinate, and the shit went wrong. You know, on the mean streets of Oakland. You know, the gagging of Bobby Seale, you know, in his trial in that kangaroo court. Violating his so-called constitutional right to being able to choose his own legal counsel and represent himself. No. Due to the one of these conventions, you know, one of the presidential conventions, you know, the militant whites, student democratic society, you know, but. You know, and then of course, like I said, you know, having H-Rap Brown, the charismatic revolutionary philosopher, theoretician known as Stokely Carmichael, And you get all them on the stage at one time. And you have what they saw as a Bentley mix. And then you had the young Chairman Fred, coming behind that. And even since some say surpassing it. And so the assassination of this young man, December 4th, 1969, 2336 West Monroe Street, which ends in the cul-de-sac. That's where for those who don't know what a cul-de-sac is, where the street goes all the way out, but it closes in like a circle, like, sort of like a Q-tip, It doesn't go all the way out to the cross street. And the cross street is like this huge, like, avenue, like a huge avenue, And the pre-dawn raid on the part of the Chicago Pigs, in cahoots with the counterintelligence program to assassinate, and having this nigga William O'Neill, who was trying to, trying to work off, I think, a car theft or something or whatever, some shit like that. His selfishness. He wasn't manning up to take his own hit. Wasn't manning up to take his own hit. Do his own time. Take your own hit, your own lick. And so William O'Neill had become Chairman Fred's close security personnel. Like I said, those who've seen the Judas and the Black Disciple firsthand account, and the making of this movie, your Mama Cool and Jerry, who's on the set, Lil Chairman Fred, at the time was in his mother's womb, his Conrad mother's womb at the time, and a very, very accurate account that took to my understanding, the little brother who plays Chairman Fred, I can't think of his name, his name is on the tip of my tongue, but anyway, this young brother is from Great Britain.
Daniel Okula.
Great. Yeah, right on. Yeah, that brother there. A heck of a job. Man, an incredible job that he played. This role playing Chairman Fred in this movie. And so they were instructed on the set. And the scene where the assassination scene, the scene that they showed and how at the time Deborah Johnson had got up, whatnot, and he put the pistol to her stomach and whatnot, and so forth, and she had instructed the young lady that played her and told her straight up, said, "Look, in that part there, don't you cry, because I didn't cry when they murdered Chairman Fred." She told the instructor, "I didn't cry when they murdered Chairman Fred. Don't cry there on that part there." Told straight up. And you can see the interviews and whatnot, and you see a while later, and you see her holding, her precious son, who today is Chairman Fred Hampton Jr., National Chairman of the Black Panther Party Cubs, formerly the Prisoners of Conscience Committee, who himself had been a political prisoner for 9 years, deep behind enemy lines. And so the legacy of Chairman Fred lives on. And some of these reports or books or writings or these posts online, even you check, such sort of like Wikipedia or whatever, these bios and whatnot, and you will see where they have he was a Black American activist, which couldn't be further from the truth. He was a revolutionary, and even in some of these books and these new books, you know, you even see some of that. And I'm not just talking about white people. I'm talking about some of these Black intellectuals who on purpose or put he was a Black activist, like they do Malcolm X. Malcolm was a Black activist. No, he was a revolutionary. We should correct them every time. But don't take this personal. But we feel that you need to make a correction here. You know? And it's serious. It is what it is. So, you know, they come in a pre-day wrong. I mean, pre-dawn raid. And to my understanding, what was said, they get a knock or something about who is it, Tommy or something like that. And it's something, you know, I remember, you know, some shit about Tommy Gunn, and then the shooting started. You know, it's, you know, 100 rounds is sprayed, you know. It was only, I believe, one shot that was able to get off from the inside. But the murder of Chairman Fred, you know, he was wounded. And then what did they do? You know, they removed his queen from the room. You know, and you know, I've had the opportunity, you know, to be up there in Chicago for the 40th anniversary assassination of Chairman Fred, and it was cold as shit. I ain't lying, but just the fact of being there, you know, looking at this. At this house, you know, like they're not brownstones, like, you know, like in New York, you know, but just the fact standing there looking at it, like in my mind, it's like, you know, I don't know what to call it, like I don't know what the word surreal or whatever, but just looking at this house, you know, and it's like man, you know, this is the fucking house, you know, and hearing her tell the story. You know, right there, and you listening to it. You know, I can remember, like, something to the effect where she can actually hear the bullets going into the mattress. You know, and it was, you know, just man, tell you, and what she say. You know, when they removed her from the room, and what did she say? She heard a. One or two more shots, you know? And they made sure. And what she said, oh, he's good and dead now. Methodical, calculated, cold, calculated, planned murder, political murder of a young man, all because he wanted the same things for his people that George Washington wanted for his. But the one thing that separated him from George Washington was that he was a fucking African. And you know, in that atmosphere, you know, certain sectors of the liberation struggle movement, I mentioned earlier the Republic of New Africa. In certain segments of the struggle, the understanding that developed the consciousness of being new African freedom fighters. So it was new Africans, similar to what Francis Nine says in one of his, very 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 informative books that he wrote, where he talks about. The reconstitution of the Black man, you know, that they crystallized into the new African here in the hills of North America. And so they developed a new African political organization, you know, which was like a graduating stage to the Black Panther Party. And there were youth who had come through there. And one of those youth was Tupac, whose mother, Phoenix Shakur, was a member of the New York, one of the New York branches of the Black Panther Party. Became famous, you know, New York 21. No. But the scope of the assassination, and of course, Hanrahan, you know, the pig, chief, the chief of all pigs, you know, or the mayor and all these people, you know, actually, you know, tried to spin the whole story. And the brilliance about what they did was they filmed and they let the people in. They let the people come see. They let the people be the witness. They let the people come and see what the state had done their servant, you know. And people love Chairman Fred. And as I said, you know, being there and you know, the gatherings, it's like two gatherings, like it's like the pre-dawn hours, and if I can remember, you know, they had lit candles, and then come back, you know, later on in the day. And I remember when we were there in the daytime. I mean, we stand, of course, you know, as my brother, as my comrade, you know, shit. I took me a post, you know, like my comrades do not, you know, for me. I took me a post, you know, and that was my back, you know, to him and facing out to the street. You know, every night again I turn, you know, hear what, you know, was being said, and who were some of the people that showed up? This what says it all right here. This is some people that showed up, you know, for this 40 year thing. China Joe, you know, one of the OG gangsters, instrumental in the founding of one of the street tribes in Chicago that the state tried to use against Chairman Fred and the Black Panthers in Chicago. You know, they tried to sow the seeds of hatred, of villainy, and so forth. Antagonism, you know, the same strategy, the same tactic they have been using pretty much around the world. You know, when they went in the so-called the Near East, what did they do? They pitted the Sunnis against the Shias. You know, because of this rift, this historic rift that the Sunnis and the Shias had been having, you know, since, you know, the death of Muhammad. You know, and there's this schism, and so the Europeans. The Europeans studied that shit. The Europeans, you know, they discovered this thing. And so what did they do? They sowed the seeds of dissension. It's the same strategy that they used there. It's the same strategy that the French have used in Central Africa. The Belgians had used in Central Africa where they had the Hutus and the Tutsis, two so-called black tribal groups. And so they pitted one against the other. And the same strategy that they used in Chicago. You know, Pitt, the leader, the Peace Stone Nation, Jeff Fort, against Chairman Fred. And here you had China Joe standing right there, literally coming out of his own mouth. And he called him Brother Fred. And here you have a gangster, you know, who was in his teens, taking part in street activities and whatnot, you know, what the state, you know, the people who label, you know, that you know, they keep the hierarchy intact, gangs and whatnot, you know, and I literally hear I just own mouth saying how he influenced them and that they wanted to be like him. Then all of a sudden they wanted to be like him. Talking like him, and he had this ability, and he would say it was something about Chairman Fred, and he just had this ability to where you just couldn't resist listening to him. He just had this way about him, and so he was able to get us to listen, and we started recognizing, realizing the things that he was saying. We started going back to that, and we started realizing, looking around and realizing what he was saying made all the sense in the world. He said that's what triggered it. He said that's what triggered it. He said that's what, when they realized that, then that's, they knew right then and there they had to murder him. 21 years old. And mind you, some of these cats was older than him, was a little older than him. A lot of them was younger than him. It was teenagers and stuff. You know, but literally out of his own mouth, there's this instructor. I don't know if he still teaches at Colorado University, but his name is Ward Churchill, right? And Ward Churchill, according to him, he's Indian, his ancestry, right? I looked up, I knew who he was, and I looked up, and boom, he was standing right there. You know, and I passed a few words to him. You know, and this is the Ward Churchill who had written a book, right? He written this book, The Counterintelligence COINTELPRO Papers. And I tell, you know, over the years, you know, those of us who defected from the New Black Panther Party. But when I was in New Black Panther, I would always tell, you know, the Congress, you know, I advise them, I say, everybody, you know, should get a copy of the COINTELPRO Papers that was put together by Ward Churchill and Jerry Vanderwall, documents from the FBI's secret wars against dissent in the United States. And you know, they made copies, you know, of the documents, you know, and, you know, even on the streets, you know, recognizing game. One of their strategies was to use the street tribes to neutralize Chairman Fred. That's the term that they use, you know, in the counterintelligence objectives about preventing the rise of a Black Messiah and the labeling of the Black Panther Party as a hate group, as a violent hate group, you know. As an extremist group, the shit that they have now, the labels that they're using now under the Homeland Security Act, the Patriot Act, and all these different things, the terrorism protocols and whatnot, that was born out of the labeling of such groups as the Black Panther Party. Now what they call the Black Identity Extremists, that was born out of the Black Panther Party and their effectiveness. Their effectiveness. And so on one end, they're trying to paint the Black Panther Party also as a hate group, right? And so on the other end, Chairman Fred is contradicting them. You know, he's showing them up, you know, and so the people have started recognizing the bullshit from the real. And one of the, you know, some of these groups, these young groups, you know, like the Young Lords. The Young Lords were what? They were organizing, you know, the so-called Hispanics, you know, the young patriots, you know, they were organized, you know, the young white youth who felt disaffected, who were neglected as the poor white trash of society, whatever, you know the white vernacular, you know, that they use at the, you know, that the rich whites. Or used for the, you know, whatever these terminology label. But anyway, he was able to tap into all of that. You know, he was able to tap into it. You know, he's like, you know, in other words, like, you know, two heads is better than one, three heads is better than one, four heads is better than one. You know, compound their problems. You know, maximize their worries, their problems as much as you can. The assassination of Chairman Fred and Mark Clark of the Peoria chapter, because he had come down and, you know, they had stayed in the house together. Okay. There was several other persons who had gotten wounded but survived. And so the response some months later, you know, what's this? Like, okay, the same. All right, you talking me, right? The effectiveness of Chairman Fred and what he meant to groups outside the Black spectrum, right? And one of these groups was the Weather Underground, you know, on the Weather Underground as a result of the political murder of Chairman Fred Mark Clark, had basically declared war on the state, a declaration of war. They issued a declaration of war, May 23, 1970. You know, and had come out as the Weather Underground organization. And ain't too many of us, you know, in modern times, in modern days, whether we militants, or black intellectuals, or radicals, or ag, whatever, you know, are aware of the, you know, this entity called the Weather Underground. And this was pretty much a white revolutionary underground organization. And so I want to read something that one of their persons who had spoke on the white sector of society that claimed to have been opposed to the government and all the things that have been taking place, been happening to black people, and if there was going to be some solidarity between the whites and the blacks and whatnot, because there's been some problems with that shit over the years. But the Black Panther Party made it very clear. They made it very clear. But, and even though, you know, they were criticized by Chairman Fred, you know, criticized the Weather Underground. You know, this Weather Underground, for those who don't know, have been charged of terrorist bombings during the time. You know, and they would claim, you know, that they did it. You know, similar to what they were saying that Al-Qaeda or Osama bin Laden or ISIS and the Mujahideen, all these groups that were CIA creations, state-backed creative finance creations and shit, right? You know, the Frankenstein strategy, right? Frankenstein tactic. But this is something that one of the members of the Weather Underground had written. She had said, we've known that our job is to lead white kids into armed revolution. We never intended to spend the next 5 to 25 years of our lives in jail. Ever since SDS, that's the Student Democratic Society or something like that, right? Ever since the SDS became revolutionary, we've been trying to show how it is possible to overcome frustration and impotence that comes from trying to reform this system. Let me read that again. We've been trying to show how it is possible to overcome frustration and impotence that comes from trying to reform the system. Kids know the lines are drawn. Revolution is touching all of our lives. Tens of thousands have learned that protests and marches don't do it. Revolutionary violence is the only way. Now, those are pretty strong words. Those are pretty strong words. They're only pretty strong words until it goes back to George Washington, then those words are celebrated. Then they're appreciated. It's all right. It's cool. Because our freedom from the crown was on the line. You know, our lily white lives over here in the newfound world was on the line. We were under tyranny. He was a tyrant. Go look up the word tyrant, look up the word tyranny, and you tell me what that's like, what it sounds like. You dig? But they were very clear. And it is because of the likes of Chairman Fred that he had set those whites straight. He had set them straight. He said, and today that's like saying, you know, okay, well, we see, you know, these whites walking around here, you know, wearing Black Lives Matter t-shirt and whatnot. You know, they were out there with the, you know, the protest for the legalized lynching of George Floyd and all the other black men who had been lynched or executed by the pigs. And all these whites, right, you know, they were very clear on it. And Bobby Steele was very clear on it, too, you know. But they were very clear on that. And the Weather Underground, they understood that. And they were very clear on it. Our relationship is this here. And it is no more, no less than this right here. It ain't gonna be anything less, because anything less is almost like a subversion. It's almost like betrayal. It's almost like trying to jump out of the jelly into a jam. And they were very clear on it. And when you say reform, we talked about that on the past show. Where we talked about, this is the third or fourth reform. What was the first one? The first one was supposed to be Reconstruction. They told us we was free. It officially got all the way around to the whole black diaspora on June 19th, which is now a national holiday. The state has made it a national holiday. It's like a dog. You take a dog and you caress a dog's head, right? And then the dog start wagging his tail. Shit like that, right? So that became that. So the first reform, they called a Reconstruction. What did they reconstruct? What is history taught? What is history showed? What did they reconstruct? It was a reconstruction. A reconstruction of what? White over blacks. White rule over blacks. They reconstructed it. And in the process of reconstructing it, who was born out of that? What became known as the KKK? And they already had these Jim Crow laws. And Reconstruction moved on into further Jim Crow, which went all off into the 60s. Went all the way up into the 60s. So that was the first Reconstruction. And one Reconstruction after that. They tried to reconstruct, in the civil rights, another Reconstruction. Reconstructing it over what? Over civil rights acts that were passed. Not laws, it was an act. It is what it is. Some people, I can't fuck with you on that, brother. It's a little too sensitive for me. I gotta hang up. I gotta go. I'm a back off. Motherfucker, phone start getting lesser and lesser and lesser, and the voice tone start changing and whatnot. And all because the reality is staring us right in the face. Black man, you can no longer go stick your head in the sand. That's them days over with. You can no longer stick your head in the sand. With these reconstructions, these reforming and reform, and that's what the Weather Underground stood. They understood that. Chairman Fred put it in proper perspective. There's nothing like stopping fascism. Fascism will stop us all. They've always managed to recalibrate themselves. You one of their big terms, like the chameleon. The chameleon changes its colors. It can constantly change its colors until you get rid of that chameleon, until you kill that chameleon to end your problems. It is what it is. It is what it is. This ain't some unique thing, some out of the way thing, some abnormal shit that we talking about here. This all around the world. People done had this shit all around the world. History is clearly showing it. It's just that black people right here just happen to be the last ones. We the last bastion in society. We the last bastion in the world. As simple as that. And that's what we understood. That was a whole point. So, damn, we would look at this young man, and this young man is like, he's putting it in perspective. Ain't anything he's saying is romantic. He accused other people of being romantic, adventuristic. That was one of the terms he used for the Weather Underground, And, of course, you had the reactionary forces that you had to look out for. You had the Age of Provocateurs to look out for. The William O'Neill types. I know Mama Cool said one time, I don't own my. She said that William O'Neill was a jack of all trades. He was good with his hands. At one time, he was trying to sow the seeds about some brother had been a agent and whatnot. There was some suspicion about this brother. And so Mama Cool said that William O'Neill had this idea, had this plan, that he was going to take a barber chair and turn it into an electric chair. He's going to put the nigga in the electric chair, and we're going to get him to confess. So she said he was a jack of all trades. Now, I heard this coming out of her own mouth. Who this William O'Neill dude was. And this is the type of treachery that those of us today, there's a Judas out there willing to take the 30 shekels of silver. And then when you take these young people, they can relate to somebody their age as a late teenager, someone who's moving into the legal adult age, to consume alcoholic beverages legally out in the open or whatever, getting in the door to the nightclub that sell liquor or whatever, going to the grocery store and buying their first six-pack or their first 12-pack or their first 40 or their first shot of Patron and now Kettle One and all this other stuff, right? And that's been the whole point of it all. You know, to control what goes in and out of the minds of the youth. You know, so if you have a Chairman Fred on one end, what do? So we've got to give them entertainment, fun, and games. No. But it was his genius. You know, they was able to move people in a desired manner. And so now today, we have to make sure that there's another Chairman Fred. Even though there's a biological Chairman Fred, you know, I heard my comrade speaking on a radio show today, and he was explaining, you know, to the radio show host and, you know, the listeners and whatever stuff like that, and they were talking about you know, the stuff that keeps happening to black people and whatnot, you know. And it could be sensitive, you know, but it's realistic. And it's almost like, again, you know, we speaking on some alien shit that we shouldn't be going near. That's off limits. We start talking about national response to shit, you know. And he was like trying to get them to understand. And mind you, these cats is older than him. And trying to get to understand, yeah, look, something you need to understand. He said, I'm going to tell you, there's a lot of Nat Turners out there. And I'm not saying that, you know, to stroke my ego, but I'm telling you what, you know, my comrade said, trying to get them to understand that we sitting on a powder keg. We sitting on a powder keg and some, you know, the elder of the day. He said a civil war gonna start. You know, he's like 90 years old. You know, he's been around a long time. I listened to him, you know, back when he was in the 50s and whatnot, you know, type of shit and the crime and the terrorism, you know, all this type of thing. But you listen to him, and he just blurted that out. But it's like people are, you know, we go around and we. You know, it's like we pretend like it's something sinisterly wrong here. You know, it's something sinister about I don't know if it's collectively about black people, but you know, a segment. It's a segment. You know, that's steadily trying to believe in a broken system. You know, even the white boy on CNN, you know, one of the news anchor people that do their little song and dance every morning, afternoon, and evening, and night. You know, anytime, I don't know if it's a slip of the tongue, but you talked about, you know, how do we fix a broken system? You know, how do we fix a broken system? But to understand it, and then to try to popularize it. This is what Chairman Fred, you know, was doing. It's what he was doing. You know, and some of the other cats, as I say, you know, did a little stint over some ice cream bars. I forget, it was something about 6 or 7 hours worth of ice cream bars. They accused him of something like a liberating thing and whatnot. You know, but these are attempts, you know, to remove him from the midst of the people, to remove him. And all of these strategies that kept backfiring, that did not work, that made him even more stronger, that made him, the children loved him even more. children, love them even more. You know, even if they could pretend that he still did, the children love him even more. You know, speaking about the breakfast program, you know, when asked about the breakfast program, we tell them it's a shit. You know, in so many words, you know, I love this breakfast program. You know, it mean the world to us. You know, don't fool with it. Don't mess with it. You mess with it, you get your head blew it off. You know, verbatim, like, you know, it, what it meant. You know, the breakfast program was what? You know, and as a result of that, the state's the enemy, the irreconcilable enemy. And now you see the state with a breakfast program in the school system. Many of things. You know, many of things that they adopted from the organization that they said was the most dangerous threat to the establishment. You know, the most dangerous threat. No. But that's what and who Chairman Fred means to us. There's these subtle attempts to remove the likes of the Chairman Fred from the frontal lobe, or just the mindset or the brains of black people collectively, especially young people, you know, especially young people, you know, or to minimize what he was by calling him an activist. His burial is in the state of Louisiana, in Haynesville, Louisiana. We as a political party, we had a chance to visit the grave site. And when you go to the grave site, there's not a rectangular metal shield that was fashioned to go over his tomb. An incredible piece of metalwork. You know, hollowed out in his image and whatnot. And he had to put this metal construction over his tomb because every year the people go there and shoot it up like they'd never got enough. A symbolic reassassination of Chairman Fred. And that was December 4, 1969. We're in the 2000s now. Even in his grave, his physical remains in his grave. And every year, he should shoot it up. And it's something, there's a feeling about the grave site. You know, some type of phenomenon, you know, that exists there. You know, but we had a chance to go. In our inauguration, you know, Black Panther Party oriented, Garvey influence. It is because of Fred Hampton, a Chairman Fred, Big Chairman Fred. It's because of the Big Chairman Fred. You know that the People's Political Party is who it is. It's who is what it is. You know, there are the groups out there, they're influenced. You know, we're all influenced by something. We're all influenced by something. And this is what I meant when we talk about the young people today. A brother I've been knowing for some years started a group. I'm trying to think the name of it, but it was Fred Hampton something, intercommunal, something like that. No, but he was focusing on educating the youth about Fred Hampton, Chairman Fred. You know, those who come up in the what we now call the American public food system. We understand it is very clear that you give us certain figures and individuals. And when you look at it, it is what it is. It is what it is. You know, you give us certain individuals and certain figures whose attitude or ideology is a safe one. You know? It's a safe one. It's cool. You know, this has been checked and verified. No. It's bigger than civil rights, human rights, our right to exist in on this earth. You know, if black people, African people, whom the Greeks call Ethiopians, which is a term that just simply means burnt face because of the impression that the sun had burned us. If we're the original people on this earth, then why are we having problems reestablishing our position on the earth if we're the original people and we're God's chosen people? What's the problem? What is the problem? You know, it would be rather strange, you know, to keep saying that. And our position on the work is one of what? Subserviency. Hoping, wishing, praying, and begging. Trying to appeal to a moral capital, to a people who don't even have one. When we speak about this Constitution, and all this other shit for the sake of it. Yeah, we have to meet our people where they at. And at the same, we meet them where they at. And it's our goal, our duty, our responsibility to politicize them or politically educate them like Chairman Fred said. Or fascism will stop us all, even when he was saying it. Who can refute the position that's what it is? For those who may not have heard, how do you define fascism? Fascism is basically when the government and the corporations combine as one and roll together and rule shit. And so look all around you. They've stripped laws off the books where you used to sue the corporation with ease, especially in environmental protection. Like what's being done in Coushatta Parish in Louisiana, or Coushatta, Louisiana, right now as we speak. The insane water conditions at a, I believe it was an apartment complex, if I can remember, where, you know, elders live. And the type of treatment that is still meted out to us. And, of course, you know, those of us who understand that as part of the genocide plan, the depopulation program, with the water grid system, which they can use as a weapon. You know, they give you such things as cancer, pretty much cancer, you know. And this is no coincidence that is taking place, that is happening. And this is the type of condition that we have to deal with. Those who live certain lifestyles, you know, become some totally aloof, some almost totally aloof. Just aloof, some of them. Until there's another thing that goes down. And then they start seeing themselves on the top and board. No, this is what it is. No, collectively. You know, to raise our conscious level. And that's going to always be the struggle. And that's going to be the linchpin. You know, sorry for such a term. You know, the cog in the wheel, in other words. You know. That is what made Chairman Fred so powerful. You know, so charismatic. And we have to keep the spirit of Chairman Fred alive. Again, his birthday is tomorrow, 30, 1948. And his evolution, his growth as a teenager to a young man who was politically murdered. And then shortly after that, you had the attempted political murder of the LA chapter in California. And these attacks that had been started taking place, carried out in an ordered fashion, you know. And this was no coincidence. And that is what that's what they were. That's how they saw them. You know, as I said, you know, the political prisoners that had come out of that. You know, and there's a, you know, a number of other things, you know, being the above ground voice of the Black Revolutionary Liberation Movement, you know, and there being an underground a voice, because it had been understood that war, that Black people were at war, that there was a war on African people, new African people. And so as a result of that, you know, the political prisoner situation, you know, and just a cursory glance at that, when you take that into consideration, what do you have? What do you get? This is one way that you can sort of look at what the state felt about all the organizations, you know, during that time. It gives you a clear picture on what the state thought about certain organizations or a certain organization among the rest of them. You know. Why historically there's never been NAACP political prisoners? Why historically there's never been Southern Christian Leadership political prisoners? You know, you know, somebody may say, you know, there was times when, you know, some of the leadership was thrown in the paddy wagon and spent the night in jail. You know, they were, you know, they walked the next morning. You know. Some may enter that, and I understand, but it is very clear. There's no Congress of Racial Equality political prisoner who spent 49 years behind steel and cement because of their views were juxtaposed to the state. Because these were the ones who broke down the system and start getting the people to realize the shit and start moving the people in the desired manner. Urban League, political prisoners historically. And that shit has to tell you something. It has to tell you something, you know? And of course, the vamping on the Black Panther headquarters in Chicago. You know, that, you know, they were betrayed, you know, in the movies. Torching of it. And Chairman Fred, Huey P. Newton, you see, you know, you go see about the people, the people gonna see about you. And so it was the people, you know, who pitched in and helped them, you know, rebuild or, you know, recuperate because of what they had done in the community. And funeral of Chairman Fred. And there's footage of this. And you see, I mean, just long line, dozens and dozens of brothers. You know, you swore they were Black Panther Party members. But these brothers had belonged to the street tribes. And that is what he meant to them. That is what he meant to them. You know, you had the GDs, you know, the gangsters, disciples and stuff, you know, the vice lords. You know, the peace foundation. Even with Jeff Fort, his evolution from the peace stone to the El Rukin, and who is now behind enemy lines, deep behind enemy lines, still in concrete. And there's an interview of Jeff Fort, and they asked Jeff Fort, what's the greatest thing that ever happened to Chicago? And then they expected Jeff Fort to say Michael Jordan. Jeff Fort told them Fred Hemp. And on that note, we say he'll never get out of prison. And so we keep the spirit of Chairman Fred alive. And remember his words. I am a revolutionary. And that if you ain't willing to do shit, then you can forget about me. And that he ain't planning on dying by slipping on a banana peel or a piece of ice. And you know what they say, this phenomenon today, where all those who've been executed and lynched by the pigs is no more than an arm of the state. And there's this common thing now. What he say? Say her name. Say his name. And so we say his name, Chairman Fred. And on that note, we say Black Power, all power to the people. And you will rule. Stay tuned next week, 7 p.m. Central, 8 p.m. Eastern, for another show, Independence of People Party Radio, brought to you by the People's Political Party. I'm one of your hosts, National Chairman Nat Turner. I'm the co-host, our Minister of Defense, Brother Motherland. And our soft technician that I like to say, ones and twos, Sister Amelie Shum, our National Minister of Communication. We out of here.
We always say the Black Panther Party that they can do anything they want to us. We might not be back. I might be in jail. I might be anywhere. But when I leave, you can remember I said with the last words on my lips that I am a revolutionary. And you're going to have to keep on saying that. You're going to have to say that I am a proletarian. I am the people. I'm not the pig. You've got to make a distinction. And the people are going to have to attack the pig. The people are going to have to stand up against the pig. That's what the pastors are doing. That's what the pastors are doing all over the world.
Fred.
And this is what it feels like. this is what it feels like. Look, the only reason I survive, cause a nigga is special first. You get successful, then they get stressful thirst. Niggas gon' test you, see what your texture's worth. Diamonds and bites, one of them pressure burst. Street niggas, still I get checks and spurts. I'm for peace, but before I get pressed, I murk. Better days, pray for, but expecting worse. At this level, bullshit, I'm just less concerned. Cruising in the six, looking at the proceeds of rap music on my wrist. Drop another mixtape, my shit booming out this bitch. Young Malcolm, I'm the leader of the movement out this bitch, look. And this is what it feels like. Reach a level, make you question, is it real life? All the weed good, all the pussy real tight. And the only rule, keep your dollar bills right. And this is what it feels like. And this is what it feels like. And this is what it feels like. And this is what it feels like.
Scorpion bricks, way before Orbeez double disc. 40 on my lap, clap, sound like 40 did the mix. Filtered bass, sip coat, like a Michelin star chef. Chef, kiss to my wrist, I go dummy with my left. I arrest on my dick, try to audit all my checks. Too late, you know they hate when you become more than they expect. You let them crack a storm your capital, put their feet up on your desk. And yeah, you talking tough to me, I lost all my little respect. I'm selling weed in the open, bringing folks home from the feds. I know the payback gon' be mean, I'm saving all my little bread. Pray for me, y'all, one day I'ma have to pay for these thoughts. Real niggas. Niggas is a stink, it ain't safe for me, my dog. They killing niggas in they own hood, that makes sense to you at all. You burnt your bridge to the other side, you know you can't swim across. Y'all know niggas can't swim, they fried Mike after he died. Y'all know niggas can't win, you never land on your side. I arrived on the day Fred Hampton got murdered. Hold up, assassinated just to clarify further. What y'all gave birth is the chairman mixed with Jeff Ford. Big step on the jet with my legs crossed. Black stones on my neck, y'all can't kill Christ. Black Messiah is what I feel like. Shit ain't gon' stop, cause y'all spill blood. We gon' turn up even more.